During COVID, one of the fun things that we did actually was we built a studs trailer, which is our stud store on wheels. We've taken it out 3 times now since then. So the first time we took it to New York and did a big campaign around Studs Loves New York in 2021, which was, you know, right as COVID was sort of starting to wane and New York was being revitalized. The second was we took it to universities in California, to UCLA and to USC, which was super fun. And then this past year, we actually took it to BravoCon, Bravo's huge conference where they bring all the Bravo celebrities to one place and Bravo fans come and buy tickets to the conference. And it was in Vegas for the first time. And so we brought the trailer to Vegas and we're parked right outside of the convention center. And it was incredible.
Content from real people equals instant credibility for your brand. Consumers today crave real connections with real people, and they're guarded about who they'll trust. Highly polished, branded content simply doesn't cut it anymore. Let MiniSocial build a network of powerful micro-influencers around your brand who all know and love your products. They'll create something compelling that resonates with their audience and deliver it directly to you for use across all your marketing channels. Yeah, that includes ads. Meet millennials and Gen Zers where they're already hanging out, in the feeds of their favorite influencers, and get started with MiniSocial. Anna, welcome to the D2C podcast. Thanks for joining me, first of all. Can you tell me why you built Studs?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Love to be on. Why I built Studs? Well, about 5 years ago now, I went to go get another piercing, a second hole, in late August of, call it 2018. And I went to a very expensive place downtown, which had been recommended to me by a friend. I live in New York City. And I show up and they didn't take appointments online. And they told me it would be about a 2-hour wait. And I probably would have spent somewhere between $500 to $750 on one piece of jewelry for that one piercing. And so I said, this is too expensive and I don't want to wait 2 hours. And I ended up going to a tattoo parlor actually around the corner in Soho and got pierced there. And while the piercing was great, I really liked my piercer. It was done healthily and safely with a needle. The environment was really off-putting to me, and I didn't like the jewelry at all. And it was actually still quite expensive. And I said at the time, well, if you're me and you want to just go get your ear pierced and you want it done with a needle, but you want it to be relatively affordable, where do you go? And the answer is the tattoo parlor. And for most people, I think that can be a hard and sort of uninclusive experience. And so I really started ideating about studs after having that experience myself.
Super interesting. This is very near and dear to my heart. I have a 10-year-old daughter who has accompanied her friend. She hasn't worked up the nerve to want her ears pierced yet, but she's been accompanying her friend while she, first of all, went to Claire's and then I think got the video about it happening and then decided at the last minute not to happen. The next instance, they were brought to a tattoo parlor where they were explained the difference between a needle and a gun and why they'd want the needle. But then she got intimidated by the needle as well.
Yep.
Talk to me about like what Claire's is in the industry, basically, that you're also sort of innovating.
Sure. So, you know, Claire's is an iconic and beloved brand for young girls, right? I mean, I loved going to Claire's growing up. I didn't actually have my first piercings done at Claire's. I had them done at a local jewelry shop, but many, many, many kids do. And so it's not unusual to me that your daughter accompanied a friend to that experience. I think the challenge is that you outgrow Claire's, and Claire's is there in their own literature and verbiage is really dedicated for tweens, right? And so what happens when you're, call it, you know, 13 and beyond or 18 and beyond, Claire's is no longer appropriate for you, and you wouldn't think of Claire's as a brand for you in that instance. And so you're sort of left with the tattoo parlor.
Yeah, 100. And it was funny, in my daughter's case, she's 10, but she did feel proud that she was going to the more adult version rather than Claire's. And I think when she wants to get it done, she will go back to the tattoo parlor. Just talk to me about why the needle is superior to the gun for this experience.
Sure. So unfortunately, using a piercing gun is sort of like putting a 3-hole punch through your ear. It really uses blunt force pressure to push piercing jewelry back into your ear. And so a needle, one, can be sterilized, and we only use single-use needles at Studs. Every part and componentry of the tools we use to pierce ears can be sterilized. Piercing guns themselves cannot be because they're made of plastic. And piercing needle with needles allows you to get piercings on the ears that are more sort of unique and often oriented towards the inner ear. Like this piercing that I have here is called a rook piercing. You just can't even do that piercing with a piercing gun. It's not configured that way.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so you've got the concept. You've got, you know, there's this need in the marketplace that you've addressed. What were your first moves to make this a reality?
Well, I talked about it first with my now co-founder, Lisa. We had been thinking about lots of different ideas and companies that we could start. And this was the one that actually felt like the most organic because it came out of this experience that I had had. And she really loved the idea. And then we started, you know, soft socializing it, I would say, with friends and family and some investors that we knew, et cetera. And one of the things that made us, I think, feel really confident in doing it was the idea was so naturally obvious to people. And I think often in startups, that's not the case. Like, and that doesn't mean they won't be successful, but I think it means it's harder to describe what you're doing. The elevator pitch is more complex, et cetera. This was really simple. And I think in its simplicity, it made us have a lot of confidence that it would work.
So then did you start with a single location? Where did you have your first studs?
Yeah. So we have our first studs still to this day, same one in Soho in New York, Nolita specifically. We opened it in November of 2019. But before that, after in between the sort of confirmed to me that the idea is good, friends and family, and open first studio, we raised money. And we actually really, you know, worked on the business plan and then used that money that we had raised from venture investors in New York to open that first studio.
Very cool. And the aesthetic is something I think you really nailed as well. Like it's sort of, it just feels so clean. It's sort of like trendy and neat looking. Talk a little bit about the brand. First of all, how did you get, I sent it to some coworkers. I'm like, here's your risky click of the day. But I was wondering like how you got such a great domain for this brand.
Well, it's very funny that you say that actually, because when we chose Studs as the name, my husband, who works at a big finance firm in New York, went on studs.com at work and got like domained out of it. Yeah, literally.
That's too funny.
And so I was like, okay, well, we're on to something. Lisa chose the name. Lisa, my co-founder, chose the name. You know, Studs, we are very sort of lighthearted. We use a lot of humor in the brand, et cetera. And so we liked that it was sort of really on the nose, if that makes sense, naming wise. And then in terms of getting the domain, we actually had to buy the domain from somebody who owned it.
And a 4-letter domain or a 5-letter domain, that couldn't have been cheap.
It was not inexpensive, but it was definitely worth it because I think it's really, I think Studs the name and Studs the brand is so strong that having the domain was an important part of bringing the brand to life.
Talk to me a little bit about the plan. How far into your plan when you went to investors, how far did you plan versus where you are now with that initial plan? Like how many stores did you when you go for investment like that, are you just planning out the first store or the first few stores, or how did that plan look based on how you are today?
Sure. So we were planning for two, but I think, you know, it's always the best laid plans. We ended up actually doing two, but I think many people, when they go out and raise their first round of money, if I had told you then exactly where we would be today, I think on the one hand, we're sort of exactly where we thought we would be. On the other hand, obviously COVID happened in between now and then. And so that was an incredible curveball that we had to deal with. And so I would say we knew how much money we needed to raise to do two. We were able to do that. But the most important thing about what we did with that first round of money, not only was to open the doors, but to create the brand and the experience that ended up having such incredible product market fit. You know, there were lines out the door when we opened the first studio, which was amazing. And I think often when you raise money, so much of what you're really trying to do is prove product market fit, prove that you're making a thing that the consumer wants or another company wants to buy in the case of software, et cetera. And we were very lucky that was the case.
So talk to me about how you got lines out the door. Was it really just an idea whose time has come and you sort of put it out in your networks and it kind of caught fire? Or how did the lines happen?
I think both, right? I think one, we made a thing that the customer inherently really wanted. And it was interesting because based on my own experience, I sort of knew that that would be true, right? I had had such a weird experience going to this fancy place and then going to the tattoo parlor. And I think at some level, it was a little field of dreams. Like if you build it, they will come, and they did. And then separately, Lisa is an incredible marketer. And, you know, from the beginning, both made, I think the brand is great. I think we, you know, had a really fun opening party and the right influencers and celebrities in the studio before we opened. And so we created a lot of hype around the first studio, which helped. But at the end of the day, often now we open studios in places where we have very little brand awareness, and it just works because people want this thing. They were looking for an alternative to the tattoo parlor, and Studs is that, especially if you were only trying to get ear piercings done.
Totally. Okay, so talk to me about the COVID curveball. We haven't talked about this as much with as many brands because we're kind of a couple years beyond it, but I'm just curious, how did you pivot? Where were you when COVID happened and how did you pivot?
The exact time I knew that COVID was serious, I don't know if this was the moment that was true for you too, but it definitely resonated with me, was when the NBA canceled the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, uh-oh. That was probably like March 11th of 2020. And I remember being like, okay, this is now much more significant than we thought. Mm-hmm. And obviously, look, like we had started the business 3 months before it. This first studio had opened in November of 2019. And so we were, I mean, babies. We had like, we were a nascent company. And we had to shut down both studios. We had two at the time. One had been open for literally 2 weeks. And we had to close both. We closed them for about 6 months. And the thing that we were so lucky to experience was that, you know, when we reopened in September of 2020, I was joking to my parents and to Lisa. I was saying, you know, like, will anybody come back? Because obviously getting your ear pierced is a highly optional experience. It is not like going to the dentist. It is not, right, like going to doctor's appointments that you had missed for 6 months, right? You don't need to get your ear pierced tomorrow, but you do need to get your teeth cleaned, you know, however often. And I was really genuinely worried that people would sort of be like, you know what, this is optional in the midst of a global pandemic and pre-vaccine. We'll skip this for now. But when we reopened the doors, it was like we were flooded. I mean, not like flooded literally because of social distancing, but flooded conceptually because I think that people really wanted to get out of their houses and do a thing and sort of mark this experience. And there was all this research done at the time about how important tattoos were after COVID. And I think that that was really true for Studs.
I hadn't actually heard that. It's because it's that idea of sort of like marking this really momentous yes. time in human history with something that's permanent.
Yes. And also I think just feeling like I got to get out and do a thing. Like yeah. something has to happen, you know, I have to feel something. And so people went and got tattoos and went and got piercings and went and dyed their hair, you know.
I've heard a similar thing with when times are tough in the economy. And I forget if it was Warren Buffett or someone, but it was sort of this lipstick theory. It's this idea that you might not be able to mm-hmm. afford a big family vacation or something like that. But when it comes to the small, like treat yourself economy a little bit or something
totally.
to that you can do that isn't going to break the bank, but is something, you know, that you can do to give yourself some joy. I assume that's been beneficial as well.
Of course. And obviously getting pierced is highly experiential. And so, and you really remember every time you've done it. So like, if you're not being able to go on a vacation, that makes sense that you would be like, this is the small lipstick version of that thing.
Okay, so catch me up with growth. First of all, actually during the pandemic, because one of the interesting parts of your story as far as this podcast is concerned is probably how little money you've spent on ads. You know, we're a digital, Pilot House is a digital agency. So when we, you know, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So we feel like hitting the scale button with our digital ads is always something to do. But first of all, talk to me, like during COVID, did you make an attempt to pivot to more of an e-commerce based business where you were selling the actual jewelry a little bit more? And how did that go?
Yes, so we did, obviously, because all of our revenue historically before COVID happened had come from the then two studios. And so then they're closed and we have to make money. So off we go to e-commerce. It was interesting. Like, I think, look, obviously a rising tide floats all boats. Everyone was successful in e-com during that period of time, right? And so I think we were no exception. And I think we also sort of weirdly benefited from the fact that when you're heads up basically on Zoom, people can see your ears. And that was sort of a weird boon for us. And we spent a lot of time during that period focused on e-commerce and also in 21 and 2022, really focused on e-commerce. But I think to your point about how much we spend on ads, Studs is a store first business, right? Our primary growth lever is opening more studios. And I think e-commerce for us will always be a bit of a halo. And then separately, I mean, you know this better than anyone, the ad landscape is just a disaster. And so trying to compete in a category, which is, I think, very saturated in jewelry, in particular in earrings, right? In a landscape where ads are only getting more and more and more expensive, is sort of like a little bit of a losing proposition for us, but also not why we created the brand. Like Lisa and I always joke that we never would have started earrings.com, right? Because we don't think that's a, like actually a very good business. And so we have always been really focused on, okay, how do you continue to expand the studios? Because those are the growth lever and those are actually where the brand is really experienced. And that doesn't mean you don't have a website and sell earrings, but it does mean that your efforts and your dollars should go to opening more studios versus buying ads on Meta.
And then where are you now in terms of studios, what, 5 years later?
We have 22 now. We'll be at over 30 by the end of the year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's nice of you.
Cool. When you go about, walk me through the thought process of opening a new location. And then also, I'm just curious on the economics of like starting a new location, when you're aiming to be sort of revenue positive by it. So start by maybe your criteria for how you choose when and where to open a new location.
Sure. So, you know, I would say it's both art and science in terms of where we open. In terms of the science, we look where we have pre-existing e-commerce customers. We look at a lot of location-based data that's based on cell phone data, et cetera, to see how much foot traffic a given trade area will likely have, et cetera, et cetera. The art part of it is it's still sort of obvious where studs should be. Like when I think we're on store 100, it will become harder and more, I would call it science than art. But now it still feels like we opened our first studio in Chicago only late last year. Like, of course we should have a studio in Chicago. We probably should have 4 or 5 studios in Chicago, right? So it doesn't yet feel that hard. It feels easier to say no to locations than it does in some ways. Like, I think it won't feel that easy post 100, if that makes sense. And then in terms of how we think about the economics behind them, every studio we have is profitable month one. That is a core part of how the business works. They pay back very quickly. We don't spend a ton of money to build them. And so we're very focused on the studios being the primary profitability lever of the business as well as the growth lever.
As well as your top of funnel. I think like you mentioned art and science, and I feel like the art of your brand is that it kind of looks like the Apple store. It's like that in that it's very unique looking probably in terms of other stores in the mall. It's less cluttered. It's more minimal and bright. And I'm sure that was part of the strategy as well.
Of course. And look, at the end of the day, you know, the store is your billboard. The rent is your marketing dollars, right? Like where you choose to be is how customers will learn about you. And so for me, I'm very focused on co-tenancy and are we up to date on the latest developments being built in certain areas and what the developers are going to want from a merchandising perspective, et cetera.
Okay, so the product is your marketing in a lot of ways, and you're also a category creator in another way. You're not a category creator in your e-commerce game as much, but in your retail and your service offering, you are a category creator. Talk about the earscape and just sort of pioneering that as like new real estate for people.
Sure. So Lisa coined the term for earscape, and we actually trademarked it, which is really exciting. It is the combined art and science of decorating your ears with piercings that say something to the world about you. And earrings that you wear that give your ear its own special look, right? We really focused at Studs on the idea of bringing together two disparate experiences. One experience was I go to get my ear pierced at the tattoo parlor or at the jewelry store or at the pediatrician when I was really little, right? But the whole premise of having ear piercings is not to have holes in your ears, it's to buy earrings. And before Studs, the place that you would typically go to do that is anywhere from Amazon to Madewell to Etsy to fancy jewelry brand ABC, right? And we were like, okay, these experiences should be one and the same. There should be a place where I can go get an ear piercing done and I can buy the earrings to wear in it once it heals. And so that's how we coined the term earscaping. And that's why we combine the experiences because they are meant to be combined. They shouldn't be divorced.
And you've actually pioneered, I forget what it was called. It was a snake bite or something. You actually have one of your piercings that sort of like you guys pioneered a little bit.
Yes. So one thing that we're also excited about is, you know, for us, the piercers who work at Studs are really artists. And so much of what they do every day is look at a customer's ear, really help them understand what anatomy works for what their anatomy means for the types of piercings that they can get. And so a snake bite is two piercings placed very close together, much like a snake bite, if you can imagine a snake's fangs. And it's great because it can go all over your ear and it's a really unique look and it makes you feel like you got sort of cool piercings, if that makes sense, or there was really artfulness behind the piercings. And so that's why we both do it and why we're so excited that the piercers every day continue to innovate on those types of things so that we can offer people not only the best and healthiest and safest piercing experience, but also the one that feels really artful and curated.
What else goes into making that retail experience really unique and something that people remember and want to come back and get more piercings from?
Yeah, I think one is they love the piercers and the front of house folks. I think, you know, we really pride ourselves on amazing customer experience. You can see in our reviews that we deliver that. That doesn't mean we're perfect, but it does mean we're really trying to deliver that excellent customer experience every single day. And then I think the second thing is that they love the physical environments of the studios and they love that we pierce with needles. So on the physical environments, I think they, you know, Lisa designed the studios to be like chic medi spas. And also with lots of places where you could go take social content and UGC of yourself. And so I think they really nicely combine those features. And then separately, I think for us, not only are we trying to offer incredible hospitality and incredible studio design, but we're also, I think, really trying to focus on the fact that we only pierce with needles and that the customer is really looking for a place that only pierces with needles. They don't want a gun piercing. And we're the only brand that pierces with needles at scale. There is no other brand that does that.
Makes sense. And so then word of mouth has got to be a big part of it. What are you doing? How are you fostering word of mouth growth with the business?
You know, we're not doing anything, I would say, interventionally. It's just happening that way. So, you know, over 50% of our traffic is organic and direct. Word of mouth is our largest referral source. I think that just comes from the fact that, again, we're offering great customer experience. And if you have a great experience somewhere, you will tell your friends, right? Like the NPS is really high.
I have a note here about some of experiential marketing that you've done. Talk to me about what you've done outside of maybe ads, but to just get the experience to more people.
Sure. So we built during COVID, one of the fun things that we did actually was we built a studs trailer, which is our stud store on wheels. We've taken it out, I guess, three times now since then. So the first time we took it to New York and did a big campaign around Studs Loves New York in 2021, which was, you know, right as COVID was sort of starting to wane and New York was being revitalized. The second was we took it to universities in California, to UCLA and to USC, which was super fun. Seeing studs on college campuses was really motivating and inspiring. And then this past year, we actually took it to BravoCon, which was amazing. So BravoCon is Bravo's huge conference where they bring all the Bravo celebrities to one place and Bravo fans come and buy tickets to the conference, et cetera. And it was in Vegas for the first time. And so we brought the trailer to Vegas and we're parked right outside of the convention center. And it was incredible.
Super cool. And then when it comes to retention, I assume you get emails and phone numbers from everyone who comes in for a piercing. What is customer LTV like, their return purchase rates? And then what are you doing on that retention side to bring people back into the shop?
So about 30% of our revenue comes from repeat customers, and actually about 30% of the customers are repeat customers. So it's sort of ironically the same. It goes back to, obviously, we do all of the things you said. We collect emails, we collect phone numbers. We have typical retention marketing playbooks, right, that aren't, frankly, that innovative. But I think that people come back because they loved the experience. And so I think it feels for us like if we can deliver great service, you will naturally have great retention. Now, is this a replen product? No. And so we're not naive about that, right? Like this isn't about like buying underwear. It's not a consumable, et cetera. And so I think there is a natural limit to how many piercings a given customer will get over their lifetime and with studs. But the great thing about that is that this piercing is a timeless tradition, right? And so every year, while one customer may be like, you know what, I'm maxed out on 12 piercings, I'm sort of done for my ears. There's another customer who's like, oh, I'm just starting that journey.
I'm just looking at the total addressable market. And so it's two ears for however many millions of people. So it's quite a large total addressable market. What are your goals with how big you think studs can be?
I think studs is, you know, it's funny when we talk about TAM, we talk a lot about how we're making market share. not just taking market share. Because I think at least even for somebody like me, like when I went to go get that second piercing, I think if I wasn't really determined to get it, I just wouldn't have gone to the tattoo parlor and I would have skipped. And so I think there are a lot of customers that are like that, where they're just sort of like, you know what, the experience is negative enough that I'll just opt out, right? And so we're very focused on, okay, how do we bring studs to everywhere so that people who are excited about this but haven't yet done it because they don't want to go to the tattoo parlor will do it.
Totally. I'm just seeing it's 2,300 Claire's stores worldwide.
So yeah, it's huge. I mean, yeah, it's
absolutely huge.
Yeah, we're on 22.
And not in Canada yet. So my daughter, and again, you won't, yeah, you also don't pierce until 13 because there are some regulations with people under 13. Is that right?
It depends, but state by state. Some places do have regulations. Some we just think that it's the best product offering we can give to be really for 13 and up.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know it's your strategy. And I think there probably are so many tweens right around that age that already could be very easy, could see a studs and see a Claire's and be like, ooh, studs 100%. Is so much cooler.
And it's interesting. And I would say never say never, but yeah. For now, I don't mind being the second piercing and beyond business. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because, you know, when I think our product offering is really dedicated to an 18 to 35 year old. Obviously, we pierce 13 and up, and there have been 90 year olds in the studios as well. But I think in order to be effective in brand, you have to be like, who is this really for? Who is the core of this audience? That doesn't mean that a 13 year old can't come in and have an amazing experience. They can, but it's really different if you're creating a brand for a 13 year old than you're creating a brand for a 25 year old. And I think for one thing that is interesting, I think for all of these brands that do this is once you skew younger, you can never go back. You're sort of stuck younger.
When you're older, you can be aspirational more.
Yes.
We always like to ask if we were to give you $100,000, that was, you know, you didn't have to pay it back. It's just $100,000. So you could use it either in something you're currently doing or something additional that you'd want to test. How would you deploy that in the next quarter, say, to see the most growth in your business?
Is this actually on the table? I'm like, ooh.
It's not yet. Once we get our venture fund going, maybe. But right now,
yeah.
No strings attached and no real money.
It's interesting. I'll answer in two ways. I think the first way is I'd really like to explore how we could be using AI better in our business. And I don't say that in sort of like a silly sort of meaningless way. I think there's actual tooling that all different parts of the business could be using that would make our jobs just more efficient, right? And we don't have the time or the resources right now to focus on it, and I wish we did. So that's one. The second I would say is, you know, I would say we are much more leaned into brand marketing than are into paid media. And so I would continue to lean in to that even more so than we are today. I'd probably go do another partnership to bring Studs on Wheels to another place, et cetera, because I find that as the ad landscape gets worse and worse, I talk a lot, you know, to the team about how do you, I don't know if you've ever read this article, and I always find this article really helpful. An investor wrote an article in maybe the early 2000s about the law of shitty click-throughs.
Okay.
And I think it's such a really smart way to articulate how ads inevitably degrade through time. And it's basically all about how, of course, when the first banner ad was presented to you, everybody clicked because it was so novel and like you'd never seen a banner ad before. Similarly, the first ad on Instagram, you clicked because you were like, what is this, right? Now you mute your TV when commercials are on, if you even have subscriptions that allow for commercials, right? So all advertising sort of inevitably declines as the user or customer gets used to the medium, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, if I had $100,000, a lot of what we do at Studs already, and I would just continue to do more, is be like, okay, how do we create virality and somebody thumb stopping on something that we're doing, right? Because otherwise they're just going to ignore it. I could sink $100,000 extra into Meta tomorrow and it doesn't matter, right? Yes, my impressions would look high and in theory I would get some ROAS and whatever, but like, would it resonate to the customer? No, but when I do a partnership with a viral hot chocolate brand in New York City and it creates lines down the block, like I create a moment where people are gonna be like, I remember Studs. I can think of Studs the brand. And so I would just go do more of that.
Talk to me about that instance. You mentioned influencers when you first launch. How do you mm-hmm. think about influencers and those kinds of partnerships? And give me an example of one that really worked.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot about what is in the zeitgeist. and what I'm paying attention to, right? And I often think about, okay, well, how, if I'm paying attention, right, or people on my team are paying attention, how can we go partner with those people or those brands that are actually really having influence now in a way that feels organic and easy? Like, for example, Tinks, when Tinks was gaining tons and tons of followers, let's call it in 2020, 2021, et cetera, came into Studs a bunch of times, and it was super helpful for us, right? For her to post, some of which were organic. I can't even remember if we worked with her in a paid capacity. But like at that moment in Tinks's sort of ascent, right, it was exactly the right time for her to be talking about Studs. I wish we'd done it with Alex Earle like a year ago, right? I think it would have been amazing. But that's what I mean when I'm sort of like, I'm constantly thinking about what am I paying attention to right now and how do I get that person or that brand to interact with Studs in order for somebody else to who's paying attention to them to pay attention to us. It's sort of like the transitive law of marketing.
I like it. I'm just Googling like celebrities with multiple piercings, and there's a lot of the most like it celebrities that have tons, like Scarlett Johansson has a ton of piercings.
Tons.
What's the biggest celebrity that Studs has worked with currently?
We don't, you know, to be honest, we're just so lucky. Celebrities just come in. Like, yeah. We've never paid a celebrity to come to Studs, a real celebrity. I mean, J-Lo's come to the studio before. Amy Adams has come to the studio. Nicole Kidman came to the studio. Many come with their kids because their kids are old enough to get pierced. Liza Koshy was getting pierced in the Houston studio this past week, which was amazing. And they were so excited. You know, she has 17 million followers or something crazy. Rosalia has been to the studio to get pierced. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Very cool. What are you most excited for in 2024 on the horizon for the brand that you can talk about?
Something in May that I can't talk about, but everyone should pay attention.
Oh, okay. In May. Okay. Good to know. This actually might not be out until May, so we can look it up when it comes out. That's exciting. Great. Cool. And other than that, just growth. How many? So you said you're 22 locations now?
We're at 22 now, and we'll be at over 30 by the end of the year.
Over 30 by the end of the year. But no Canada locations planned yet. No Vancouver or Toronto vacations or
not
locations
yet,
planned.
But I'm sure definitely in the future.
Well, I'll stand by. I think my daughter may be waiting because I think she's still wearing the clip-ons from Claire's right now, but she's definitely getting into the full tween stage. So she might be outgrowing that pretty soon.
She'll be there soon.
She'll be there soon. And you guys will be ready. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast today. This was a lot of fun, Anna.
Of course. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.